Hello and welcome to the February edition of the Clutch Football Podcast with me, James Martin, and my regular guest, Fabio Duarte. This month, it's our special stats edition. We've been doing our research and we've come prepared with some of the most interesting statistics from the season so far. Some of them will be more serious than others, but hopefully all of them will be decent discussion points. So we're just each going to go through and pick out some of our favourite stats. Fabio, you come with a good selection today?
Yeah, I love ones I've come up with.
All right, well, we'll see what we've got. There could be some duplicates, of course, but there's a lot of data and statistics out there, so it would be unlucky if we have. Right, let's dive straight in. I'll kick us off with one of my favourites. Regular listeners will know that I'm partial to a bit of expected goals, so I've gone straight to the XG table. Basically, if all of the matches panned out in accordance with XG, this is how the table would look. And the most interesting takeaway from that is that Brighton are sixth.
Sorry, you're waiting for me to come in.
I thought any normal person would have a reaction to that, that's all.
Right, let me see. This is what happens when we don't record for a month. Sixth is obviously a bit higher than I was expecting. We both hyped up Brighton at the start of season based off their performances, so I'm not too surprised to see them outperforming where they are in the table, but definitely not sixth.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw that. I mean, it's one of them where we have commented at various points in the season that they've been playing well and not picking up the results. But yeah, I mean, the fact that if things had fallen their way, they'd be in those Europa League spots pushing for Europe. It's pretty remarkable. Other highlights from that table, Liverpool should, obviously in inverted commas, should be second. I think that speaks mostly to some of the poor finishing, particularly in recent games. And I had a look where Chelsea should be for you as well. They're fourth on XG. So I don't know what you make of that.
Yeah, I can cling to that.
that's probably the highlights from the XG table. But I thought I'd kick us off with that. It's some interesting stuff in there. What have you got for me?
Let's stick with Chelsea for now. I heard this one during the Tottenham-Chelsea game the other day. Tottenham's 1-0 defeat to Chelsea completed Mourinho's first consecutive home league losses in his career.
Oh, wow.
Not a lot to say about that one. Just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he had that famous home unbeaten run with Chelsea, didn't he? Liverpool's was ended at Burnley the other day, so that's safe for another 4 years plus. So that's probably good news for you as a Chelsea fan. But yeah, I mean, the fact that that's his first back-to-back home defeats is astonishing, really. I give him some stick these days, say that the game has probably passed him by at an elite level. But yeah, I mean, that speaks to how good a career he has had. So yeah, fair play to him. Can't say much more than that, really.
I think it's also worth mentioning that the fact that it's come to an end whilst managing Tottenham really puts into focus how bad they're doing right now. Obviously, Harry Kane is a big miss, but the tactics just don't work out without him on the pitch. They're far too negative, and I don't know where Mourinho goes from here. Could end up pretty bad for him.
Yeah, and you've given me a good lead into my next stat, actually. I was looking at goals per shot. The top 10 is mostly just full of defenders and other players who don't shoot that much. And then just out of nowhere, you've got Son in third. Which is ridiculously impressive on his part, just so efficient. But it also shows you how relatively few times Spurs are actually getting into those shooting positions under Mourinho. It makes you think that without two such clinical finishes in him and obviously Kane, they would be in a full-on crisis.
Yeah, it makes you think that Son would really thrive in a system where he's getting a lot more chances and a lot more involved in front of goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It's scary to think what his output might be like in a team more built around kind of volume of chances. For a Liverpool, for example, I mean, yeah, his numbers would be through the roof.
I've got another Spurs one, if we want to stick on that. Spurs failed to make a single ball recovery inside Chelsea's half in the first 45 minutes the other day.
Wow. The whole first half. Wow, that's that's not a great one for Mourinho either.
Yeah, not a lot more to add on what we've already said. Just thought that was staggering.
Just piling on.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was another one. I haven't actually got this in my list, but I did see it. I'll see if I can get it right, because like I say, I didn't actually come with this one, but just it's fun bashing Mourinho with stats. So I think it was Chelsea had 18 efforts on goal in the game and Tottenham had 19 in all of their home games against the top four.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So, yeah.
That really shows what the game plan is, or lack thereof.
Yeah, I mean, we should mention that that's obviously without Kane in the latest match. But yeah, even with Kane, it's a case of just hope that the chances come to him or Son and make sure they take them. But yeah, that's enough Spurs bashing. We'll move on into a more positive light. I'm going to give some praise to Alphonse Areola at Fulham. He's outperforming his expected goals against more than any keeper in the league. So Emi Martinez is obviously the one taking the spotlight at Villa. And to be fair, he is second in this metric. So great signing for them. Don't know what Arsenal were doing. But Areola has gone under the radar a bit, I think, just because his team as a whole has underperformed a bit. So, I mean, there's a reason he was at PSG and he's really carried over that kind of elite level form to Fulham.
Yeah, I agree with you regarding Martinez. He's definitely getting far more praise than Areola. Areola is doing incredibly well, especially considering how poorly Fulham started in defence. If you look recently, I think they've only lost two of their last 10, I think it was. A lot of draws in there, obviously. But they've been low scoring, and that has to be in big part thanks to Areola.
Yeah, definitely. I think if they stay up, then he'll pretty much be the reason. I suppose there's been a couple of memorable saves in there where he's just kind of almost impossible saves. I mean, I can't actually think of any specifics, but I do remember just seeing a few where he sort of clawed it back off the line from really close range, and that does skew the numbers, but equally they skew them for a reason. They're really tough saves to make, and he's just such a good short stopper. It's one of them where, you know, in a better team, maybe those kind of distribution aspects of the game might let him down a little bit, but for a team like Fulham, he's just so good and could be the difference between going down and staying up. We'll move on.
All right, we'll go with this one. Don't think there's too much discussion, but Jesse Lingard has outscored Kevin De Bruyne from open play this season. So,
wow.
I think that concludes that. Lingard's better than De Bruyne.
Confirmed. You heard it here first. Wow. Okay. I don't really know where to go with that one.
Yeah, I didn't really bring it up for a discussion point. Just thought it was surprising.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, bagged a brace on his debut for West Ham. So how many has De Bruyne scored from open play this season then?
I think it's just the one.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Surprising that De Bruyne has been so quiet from open play in terms of getting the goals, but obviously creating chances as per usual when he's fit. But yeah, I mean, good debut from Lingard. I'm just going to move swiftly on now. I can't talk about this anymore.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I'll move on to another fun one as well. I'll let you guess this one, actually. Who do you think has the most nutmegs in the Premier League this season?
It's not going to be Jack Grealish, but that would have been my guess. Who is it?
It's Marcus Rashford with 8 nutmegs.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't have him up there either, really, in my head. I mean, once I found the stat, then that was it. I couldn't guess anymore, so I don't really know who I would have guessed, but I don't think he's one of the ones who would have sprung to mind. In case you're wondering, Richarlison and Lookman are joint second with 7 nutmegs.
I don't know who's counting these.
I know, what a job. What do you do for a living? Oh, I count nutmegs. But yeah, they're doing a public service because now we can reveal that to our listeners today. So you're welcome. So moving on to a more kind of serious stat, there may be some things we can dive into here. So this one's Liverpool related and it's to do with the pressing. Roberto Firmino is kind of thought of as the pressing machine in the Liverpool side, but his pressing has dropped off quite a lot this season. He's still the leader of the press. He's made 284 pressures so far, which is just over 15 per 90. That's still very good. I mean, I've watched you play and, you know, you make one sprint and that's you done for the game. So, I mean, it's still very impressive. But he was pressing almost 21 times per 90 last season. And then if you look through the squad, it's the same story for Salah. He's gone from 17.25 pressures per 90 all the way down to 12.5. And Mane as well, with a fairly significant drop-off. And if you keep on going through the squad, you'll just see the same thing over and over again. I have a couple of ideas about what that tells us, but do you have any kind of initial reaction to that?
Yeah, my initial reaction has to be the amount of fixtures in such a short space of time and all the injuries, the squad stretched. Surely that's going to play a part.
Yeah, that was one of the points I was going to raise. I think that's a big thing. It's about the congestion and that kind of fatigue, which as a sort of casual bystander, you'd say was happening. That I guess the numbers kind of bear that out. I also, though, think that it tells us something else, which is that Liverpool are facing teams who are sitting increasingly deeper and deeper, content to counter and forcing Liverpool to play through them. Famous Klopp quote, of course, is pressing is the best playmaker. And so opponents have sort of figured that out and said, OK, well, we'll deprive you of that playmaker and we'll force you to just work it through low blocks. Another stat which would back that up is average possession this season is slightly up, 64.3% for Liverpool, up from 63.5% last season. Only a small difference, but it makes a difference. And then also, Liverpool have actually made more passes than Manchester City this season, which is very unusual and surely must be a byproduct of just kind of not being able to find a way through.
Yeah, I think where pressing has become so common in so many teams recently, they've had to find ways to counteract that. So when it comes to Liverpool playing a pressing game, teams are perhaps more equipped than they were last season or the season before to deal with that.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the cyclical nature of the game as well, in the sense that pressing in its most recent form kind of emerged as a response to the kind of pure possession style of Guardiola at Barcelona, for example. And then equally, when you look at Borussia Dortmund and how Klopp finished there, it's almost like team cycles where I'm not saying this Liverpool team has necessarily reached a point which they're not going to bounce back from, because there's so many factors to consider, like injuries in particular. And if they refresh the squad well with new signings, then we could easily be looking at them going again. But it's a case of maybe there does come a point where the system just does to some extent stop working or gets worked out and has to be refreshed.
Yeah, I think perhaps, I mean, it's early to say, but we could be seeing the start of a new system coming to the fore.
Yeah, and what shape that takes is hard to say. I saw an interesting thing after the Brighton game. It was a kind of, it's hard to talk about it on a podcast, but it was very much a visual thing. It was average positions of the team, and it was just so narrow. And that's not the way to go. Having just seen that, I saw an old clip from Guardiola talking about the essentials of playing against low blocks. And the first thing he said was get it wide. You can't stay that narrow and expect to find ways through. I mean, with Thiago, maybe part of the thinking is let's try and find those intricate ways through the middle. But it's just so congested when teams play like that. And yeah, so I don't think long term that's the solution. But equally, you look at the crossing stats, Liverpool have put in by far the most crosses this season. And that's not working either, because we don't have anyone to aim at. And even when you do have a big target man, you're still trying to pick him out from kind of seven or eight defenders in the box. So yeah, it's a tricky one. And I do think we will need to see this Liverpool side evolve if they want to stay at the top, which is quite a sombering note for me as a Liverpool fan. So I'll let you give us a different stat now.
Okay, I think I'm going to pile it on a little bit. It's not about Liverpool, but it's your would-be title rivals, Manchester City. They are on a 13-match winning run, which is the longest by a Premier League team since Arsenal's Invincibles.
Huh. Wow, that's really surprising.
So obviously that includes all competitions, because I think Liverpool and Man City have the joint longest Premier League winning run at like 18 or something.
Yeah.
But for all competitions, it's 13.
Wow. Yeah, I suppose that's a mark of how in the modern game, there's a lot of kind of prioritisation that goes on. So, I mean, for example, Liverpool, during that 18-game Premier League winning run, I'm pretty sure they dropped out of the domestic cups in that period. But yeah, I mean, nonetheless, still very surprising that 13 all comps is the longest since the Invincibles. Do I have any Arsenal stats that relate to that? Just having a quick look through. I don't think I do. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, all right. So another Man City one here. The fewest away goals conceded in a Premier League season was 9 by Chelsea in 2004-05. Man City are currently on 6 with 9 away games left, and only Leicester, Liverpool and Everton left in the top 8 to play.
Well, I don't think they'll do it, but can we just talk about 9 in a season for a second?
Yeah, I mean, incredible.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Southampton just did that in one game.
I think that was 15 total as well in that season, so 6 at home.
Yeah, I mean, that is staggering. But yeah, I mean, it's fair enough to raise City. They're not on track, but they're not a million miles away. And like you say, with not too many away games against top teams left, it's possible. But yeah, I mean, unless someone gets close to the 15 home and away, then that would be the really remarkable thing.
I looked at the total, 15. Manchester City on 13 now, I think. So I didn't bother raising that one because that's just not going to happen, surely.
Yeah, there was some City fan doing a thread the other day about records that could still be broken. And it was just bizarre that he would say stuff like that, like, and say, and with Diaz in the team, we're on track to do it. It's like, no, you're not. But yeah, it's been a very impressive season for City, certainly. After the first couple of months, they've really hit their stride again, much more than any other team. And I think we both agreed they're probably going to walk the league, regardless of what records they break along the way or not.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be the case. I saw that Paddy Power had paid out on anyone who bet on them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get why they do this. I suppose it's meant to be funny. I don't really get it, but fair enough. You do you, Paddy Power. I've got another one for you. Again, quite a fun one rather than anything too serious. But Manchester United are the second dirtiest team in the league, behind only Sheffield United, on fouls committed.
Yeah, I don't immediately have anything to comment on that. I don't know why. You?
No, I mean, literally in my notes I said I have no real analysis on that, just thought it was interesting. So I guess we'll move swiftly on. But I mean, yeah, it's surprising.
Yeah, it's definitely surprising. I would have expected some team that maybe sits back all the time to have the most fouls. But
yeah, well, I mean, that's logical. I mean, you look at fouls committed, and I think last and second last on that metric are City and Liverpool, just because they have the ball so much. But yeah, just there you go. You know, I did foul a lot. I'll give you another one. So I'm not at all surprised that Grealish is the most fouled player, sticking with the fouls theme. But he's so far ahead of the rest. It's truly amazing. So he's been fouled 91 times this season. Zaha is second. How many times do you reckon Zaha's been fouled?
Let's go with 60.
Pretty good guess, actually. He's been fouled 56 times. So a massive difference to Jack Grealish.
Yeah, that's crazy how far ahead of Zaha he is. Because Zaha's always drawing fouls as well. Just goes to show how big an impact Grealish is having this season.
Yeah, he popped up in so many of these stats I was looking at. I picked out fouls just because I thought it was the most remarkable. But, I mean, all of the metrics you'd want your playmaker to be doing well in, he's there. I mean, I think he's top for carries into the box. Chances created, he's right up there. I can't believe how good a season he's having. I've used this comparison on the podcast before, but I'll say it again. It's very much kind of Coutinho and Hazard-esque, kind of rolled into one, the impact he's having. And in a team like Villa, he just is head and shoulders above absolutely everyone there and is dragging them to remarkable heights. But they were right up there in the XG tables as well. I mean, they're right up there in the actual tables. So, yeah, I mean, just a truly remarkable player. Do you think he'll get a move in the summer?
I mean, if he wants one, then he's got plenty of suitors. It's just up to him. I think he's an Aston Villa fan, so you never know. They're not going down. But yeah, he could play for any top six side.
Yeah, easily. I think it'd be quite fun to see a move abroad. Just, you know, one of those fairly rare instances of an English player going up and ripping it up in the foreign leagues. I suppose it's a bit more commonplace these days with the Bundesliga in particular. But like a Barca or Real is probably out of the picture with their much publicised money troubles. But something like that would just be so cool to see.
Yeah, I think he could get a spot in pretty much any team in the world. Maybe not a starting spot, but
Yeah, remarkable to say that. If you said that to me at the start of the season, I'd have found someone else to do the podcast with. But yeah, he's just been absolutely unbelievable. And I'm sure there'll be Villa fans who are saying, well, he's been that good for ages. And yeah, I mean, sure, he has been really good for a long time. But yeah, this season has just been levels. I mean, everyone's had to sit up and take notice. But I mean, it's not the Jack Grealish podcast, so we should probably move on. You'll like this one. I had a look at expected goals against for Ramsdale this season and Dean Henderson last season. So you've said before that this downgrade is a big reason for Sheffield United's struggles. And yeah, the numbers bear that out. So Ramsdale is underperforming. He's conceded 1.6 more than he should have done, statistically speaking. Whereas Henderson conceded a massive 5.2 less than the model said he was supposed to over the course of last season. That's big, basically. I mean, 5.2 goals can be, you know, can win you multiple games. It can win you 5 games. That's 15 points. So, yeah, I mean, that can be staying up and going down. So, yeah, definitely you were right to pick up on that in earlier episodes.
Yeah, I think that's very big. You don't see XG disparities quite that large with individuals usually. It shows how good Henderson was last season. It's a real shame that he's not playing regularly for a team this season.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Actually, when he's played for United, he hasn't looked great. It's one of those weird things where I guess players are just suited to situations. And I suppose if you haven't been getting a run of games, it's a tough ask to just come in and perform. But yeah, certainly the way he was playing last season, he deserves a regular space in a team this year. But then equally, from United's perspective, you've got a top quality second choice you can just call back in. So makes sense for them as well, I suppose.
Yeah, it does make sense. Plus, he assisted a Sheffield United goal earlier this season.
Did he?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember. He got tackled pretty much on the goal line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. I thought you meant he got an assist in that game. Sorry, yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, he was still helping out his old team. So, yeah, Sheffield United through and through, clearly. That's me, done a couple in a row there, so I'll throw it back over to you.
All right, I've got quite a lengthy one here. So Derby County conceded the most goals in a first 8-game Premier League season with 89. The reason I bring this up is West Brom. So far, they've conceded 52, which averages out at around 2.4 per game. So over 38 games, that would be 89.8 goals.
That's landed well for you, the fact that it's just over the Derby record. But yeah, that's interesting. I don't think I'd even really clocked that, to be honest. I didn't realise they were quite so porous this season.
No, I hadn't necessarily realised that West Brom were bottom for goals conceded. I started looking at that one after Southampton's 9 goals and then spotted them at the bottom on 52. Do you reckon they're going to break the record?
Well, I mean, like I say, this whole thing is new to me. If you'd asked me, I'd have said they were just relatively normal in terms of goals conceded. But yeah, I mean, looking at the numbers, I suppose it's possible. I guess with the classic, now Big Sam's in, his whole mantra is to play tight at the back, even if that's at the expense of creating chances going the other way. So like there was a 5-2 against Everton earlier in the season. Now I stop and think about it. And you couldn't necessarily see that happening under Allardyce. It would probably be a 2-0 defeat instead, which, to be honest, is obviously no better. And as a fan, you think, well, we might as well be losing 5-2 as long as we're still losing, at least. So that's my attitude to it. But yeah, at least in terms of not getting that unwanted record, I think Big Sam will probably save them.
My first instinct would be no, they won't break it as well. But they did lose 5-0 to Leeds shortly after Allardyce took over. So you never know.
Yeah, I mean, you're not giving him much time to work his magic there, but yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I think that they should tighten up a little bit. They're still going down, and in my book, they're finishing bottom, but less than 89 goals.
It would be nice if Sheffield United didn't finish bottom. It would somewhat salvage my optimistic prediction for them at the start of the season. If you want to check out our roundup of the predictions and how they're going so far, then check out last month's episode. But yeah, basically, I put them far too high. So their mini redemption is very much being cheered on at my end. We'll move on to a different stat here. I'm running pretty low now, but this one is quite a fun one. I actually found it really interesting as well. We think of the Premier League now as this completely global league, and of course in many ways it is. Chelsea famously fielded the first all foreign 11. That was way back in 1999, and the trend has only carried on in that direction since. But the vast majority of players are still English. There's 227 English players this season. The next most represented nation... Well, why don't you have a guess at what it is?
Home nations count, yeah.
Home nations do count, yeah.
I'm going to ignore them anyway. Let's say France.
Very good. It is France. Yeah, they overtook Spain, who were second in the season before. The home nations, they're kicking around in the top 10. I think Scotland is quite high up. I don't think Wales is on the list, actually, to be fair. Or Northern Ireland, so just Scotland in the top 10, but then Ireland is not a home nation, but it is in, I think it's fifth. So I thought that was quite interesting, and it's a massive disparity as well. So like I said, 227 English players. I'll give you another guess, why not? How many French players do you think have played in the Premier League this season?
How many English did you say?
227.
Let's go with 80.
It's 37. So, yeah, still very much majority English. Yeah, I would have guessed a similar amount to you, to be honest. But yeah, English players about more minutes than the rest of the top 10 nations combined. So there you go.
Actually, regarding that stat, I saw something earlier outside of, I think it's the home nations in Ireland. So it's France, Spain, and then the next most represented nation is now Portugal.
Huh. I guess Wolves.
Wolves account for 90% of them.
Yeah, no, that's interesting to see how these kind of demographics change over time, though. See which ones are kind of steady at the top. And yeah, France and Spain have been fairly regular staples for a little while. Be interesting to see how much, if at all, this changes with kind of EU membership no longer being a thing, and what kind of rules are imposed in respect of that. I saw City bought another couple of clubs quite recently, Estac Trois in France, and then it was a Belgian club, can't remember what it is now, but that's all just in an attempt to make kind of the corridors of travel easier to get these foreign players in. So yeah, it's definitely one to watch for the future, but yeah, for the time being, France and Spain quite high up, but England miles ahead.
Yeah, pretty interesting. I've got one more stat left. It's quite a lengthy one though. So Leeds are doing quite well for a newly promoted side, which got me thinking about record finishes. Newcastle United and Nottingham Forest jointly hold the record for best performing promoted team. Each of them finished third in the early 90s. Obviously, Leeds aren't getting third, so I want to look at the next best. Blackburn in fourth, Ipswich fifth, Sunderland and Wolves seventh, and Reading eighth. So,
wow, all the big names.
Unlucky Leeds, but they're not going to trouble them.
No, you wouldn't have thought so. And that just shows you how more entrenched the top sides are these days compared to the early days of the Premier League. It's a bit of a shame, but even in this kind of topsy-turvy season, there's just no way a team's going to come straight up and challenge for the top six, never mind the top four.
Yeah, exactly. From the teams I listed there, only Wolves have been in the last 10 years. And I think it was only Wolves, Reading and Sunderland. I think Sunderland were 2001. So, yeah, this was very much a 90s thing.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah, I was just trying to think about the teams in the Championship now. Is there anyone who you think could come up and challenge that kind of thing next season? You'd have to say no.
Yeah, no. I think Wolves recently were the best set to break the top six, and they did very well to their credit. But there's no other sides as well as equipped as Wolves were in the Championship.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there are quite a few strong sides in the Championship this season. I mean, because obviously Bournemouth didn't lose too many of their players. Watford, likewise. I mean, they're just still playing in the Championship with Ismaila Sarr, who was obviously linked for 40 million moves in the summer. So, yeah, there are still some strong squads down there who, if they come back up, are relatively well placed to at least survive. But yeah, like you say, even with Leeds, who are doing uncharacteristically well for newly promoted teams, it's not even close to the old days.
And Leeds were another one who were well equipped to finish quite highly. I think most people had them in mid-table. So, yeah, that just shows how big the gap is right now.
And, of course, they have Bielsa, who, you know, legendary manager of the game. It's not too often he comes up from the Championship.
Yeah, of course. Most Championship sides aren't going to have a manager anywhere near his quality.
Right. You got anything else to add, or are we pretty much done?
No, I'm all out.
Nice one. Me too. I hope you found them as interesting as I did. I certainly enjoyed them and enjoyed looking them up and, of course, hearing Fabio's contributions. Thank you very much for listening, and join us again next month for the March edition. Goodbye. Would have been nice if I'd known what the March edition was before I said that, but never mind.